Well, it is that time here this evening. It is 6 o'clock on Thursday evening here in Bel Air. 91.1 WHFC. My name is Evan John. You're listening to The Water Cooler. And we have some sports to talk about this evening for sure. Baseball is, of course, in full swing. News around the league. Baltimore Orioles news there. There's NFL news to talk about. The draft is about a week away now. And all kinds of other fun stuff to talk about here this evening, including Harford County sports. Here, our very own Sean Donovan tells us what's going on in Harford County.
As high school sports continue, the Fallston Cougars softball team defeated North Harford 10-0, and the Patterson Mill Huskies also defeated their crosstown rivals, Bel Air Bobcats, 9-6. In another regional rivalry, Edgewood also defeated Joppatown 15-2 in softball. In baseball, the C. Milton Wright Mustangs knocked off North Harford 6-3. A major upset also occurred in baseball this week, as the Fallston Cougars knocked off Northeast, handing Northeast their first loss of the season. The Aberdeen Eagles also defeated Bow Manor at home 6-1. It was also a big day for the Patterson Mill baseball program, as coach Matt Roseland earned his 200th career win. That is a wrap on high school sports for this week. Until next week, I'm Sean Donovan. Have a good week.
That, of course, is Sean Donovan telling us all about what's going on across Harford County in high school sports every week. It is one of our favorite segments here. Of course, who doesn't want to hear about what's going on in local sports? A lot of good baseball, a lot of good lacrosse, all kinds of good stuff here in Harford County. But on the major league side of things, the professional side of things, big news today in Major League Baseball. The Oakland Athletics signed a binding agreement to purchase 49 acres of land in Las Vegas, just north of Allegiant Stadium, where the Las Vegas Raiders play football. This, of course, pretty much locking in the fate of the Athletics. They are said to no longer be the Oakland Athletics. They have seemingly made their decision as far as what their plan is, as far as building a new stadium in Oakland or moving to Las Vegas. They seemingly here have made their decision to move to Vegas. The Athletics held, of course, a press conference later. They said they spent about 7 years of negotiating for the waterfront stadium in Oakland. They said it just wasn't progressing fast enough. Take that how you may. They said they understand that it's a tough day for fans in Oakland. All the stuff you would imagine they would say. But the Oakland do have plans to utilize the 49-acre piece of land for a 35,000-seat stadium to host the Athletics and move to, of course, the bigger, more lively market, you could say, I guess, in Las Vegas rather than Oakland. So that's been brewing for the better part of a decade now, what the fate of the Oakland Athletics is. We've got our answer now today, as we have been leaning towards the Vegas route for quite some time now without any official news. And now we have our official news. The Oakland Athletics have a timestamp on the Oakland title there, as they are set to move to Vegas within the coming years. But moving on to the local side of things, the Baltimore Orioles. Since I talked to you last, it's an off day today after they get the 2-game sweep in Washington, D.C. Since I talked to you last, the Baltimore Orioles are 5-1 on the week. They had the series finale against Oakland. They won that game. They take 2 out of 3 in Chicago, and then the 2-game sweep, the 2-game shutout of the Oakland or of the Washington Nationals. That is on the road in D.C. That caps out the week here since we've had our last water cooler episode. The Orioles are 7-3 in their last 10. They're on a 3-game win streak as of right now. Like I said, the Washington D.C. series, they had fantastic pitching performances from the rotation. Dean Kramer, 6 2/3 innings of work, no runs allowed, 6 strikeouts. And then the next day, Kyle Bradish, coming off the IL after making his first start, he comes back really, honestly, feeling like this was his first start of the year. He said after the game, felt like he hadn't pitched since spring training, since he left so early in that game down in Arlington, Texas. Honestly, almost pretty much his first regular season start this year, when you think about it. He comes out, he turns in a very similar performance to Dean Kramer. 6 innings flat, no runs, and 6 strikeouts of his own. So Orioles starters, the part of the team that has struggled so far this year, they go to D.C., they turn in a combined 12 and two-thirds innings of work, 12 strikeouts, and no runs allowed in D.C. That is a fantastic turnaround for the Orioles. Brandon Hyde, very, very happy about the length from the starters, getting to rest the bullpen just a little bit. And they turn the page now, and they come home to face a Detroit Tigers team that is suddenly hot. For whatever reason, they found their groove a little bit, and the O's welcome them to town tomorrow. I'll preview that series with you in just a little bit. But the piece of not so great news for the Orioles was Jorge Mateo leaving the game yesterday in the second inning with what is being called the right hip discomfort. Rock tweeted that out, you know, during the game, and after the game, the Orioles talked about it. I believe discomfort's a good word. I think that's happy. I think it's good news that it's classified as discomfort. We don't see anything more. Brandon Hyde asked about a potential move for Jorge Mateo after the game. He said, and I quote, "Not right now." He continued and said, "The off day plays in our favor and go from there." I believe that is absolutely true. The off day is certainly... This is a massive off day for the Orioles now. You didn't have to make a decision about Jorge Mateo as you try to come home and play the very next day. I think this is probably the most valuable off day across Major League Baseball. Today, it is for the Baltimore Orioles, and it's because they get to give their star shortstop a chance to recover here, see what's going on with Jorge Mateo. Can he play? Will it be an IL stint? We hope not. Of course, but can I just talk about Jorge Mateo for a second? Jorge Mateo, last year we said, or you've heard everybody say, you know, with the defense, with the speed, if he can just get the batting average and on-base percentage up just a tick, maybe 30, 35 points, 20 to 35 points, can we get it up for Mateo? Then we can talk about everyday shortstop for a long period of time. For Mateo, of course, the Gold Glove caliber defense, that's a whole story in itself. And, you know, all the speed, stealing the bases left and right, it was just about his offensive production at the plate. And Mateo has turned in everything you needed him to and then some. Mateo is now hitting .362 on the season with a .418 on base percentage. He has 3 homers and 12 RBIs to go along with that. Albeit it's young, it's a young season. Early on in the year, we're here in the later stages of April. But what a start it has been for the Orioles shortstop. Mateo knew he had to get better. Brandon Hyde talked about it last year, that he was struggling at the plate, but Mateo would just spend hours and hours and hours in the cages, just hitting and hitting and hitting and hitting. You knew he could do the defense. You knew we could run. It was just about the hitting for Mateo, and he has turned that ship around to start 2023 for absolute certainty. And I think to an extent, Mateo knew he had to, because there's so many good prospects behind him that are ready to take his job, most notably Joey Ortiz, currently hitting .396 at AAA for the Tides. And we saw how close that these guys are. You know, your Joey Ortiz's. I know Jordan Westberg was dealing with an injury at the time, not now. But you talk about Joey Ortiz, who, you know he's a prospect up and coming, but maybe you don't think about how close he really is to the major leagues. As the other day, when Ramon Urias took that scary pitch to the head and was out for, you know, a couple days in concussion protocol, Joey Ortiz was yanked from that Tides lineup that night, you know, thinking about maybe a move to make his major league debut. And it just, it kind of, you know, you, like I said, you know these guys are down there, you know they're on the verge, but maybe you don't think how close they are until something like that happens. And one of these guys gets yanked from the Tides lineup, and you're like, wait a minute, he's on the doorstep. He's next man up. He's the answer if someone goes down. So these guys are right there. Mateo knows that. These other guys on the team know that. Mateo has made it very, very obvious he has every intention of being the Orioles' everyday shortstop for the remainder of 2023 and beyond. Let's not forget, this is the Jorge Mateo right now that was advertised when he was a prospect coming up. Mateo was in the New York Yankees farm system, and a piece of information, a fun fact you might not know. There was a time that Jorge Mateo was the number one overall prospect in the New York Yankees organization. Who was number two? Aaron Judge. There was a time, a world that exists, a world that was real, where Jorge Mateo was a higher valued prospect than Aaron Judge was. And Mateo was turning into that player here for the Orioles in 2023. Maybe Mike Elias's most notable waiver pickup. Don't forget, Mateo, a waiver claim. Waiver claim for this Oriole team. Came on the scene last year and has just taken it to the next level this year for the Orioles. And talking about players with maybe a little bit of heat, some urgency to produce, how about Austin Hayes hitting .324 and really hitting better than .324? He's hitting the ball really, really hard. He's been robbed a couple times by great plays. A .324 average that could be better. Again, early on in the season, but this Orioles offense is really clicking, firing on all cylinders. And Hayes, like I said, another one of those players. Certainly, I believe a part of future plans here in Baltimore. But Hayes, I think, has some considerable pressure to produce. With Kyle Stowers in his rearview mirror, Colton Cowser in his rearview mirror, the Orioles, for the first time in a very long time, have a fantastic problem here with prospects. There are tons of players, you know, 4, 5, maybe 6, knocking on the door of the major league team and just nowhere to put them right now. It's a fantastic issue. There's no shortage of talent here for the Orioles. It's a good problem to have as an Orioles fan, being the organization. And it's really fun to see. The Orioles pitching has struggled a little bit. We know that. But the offense has really carried the weight. They're 11-7. They're second in the American League East. A very, very tough American League East. I'll talk about that in just a little bit. They're currently wildcard one in the major leagues, and you point to an offense that is really firing on all cylinders, like I said, and two key guys, Gunnar Henderson and Anthony Santander, are not playing well. They're not. And this offense is still carrying the weight. Now, granted, over this past week in DC, it was starting pitching. The Orioles win 1-0 and 4-0, a 2-game shutout of the Washington Nationals. So the pitching came back to form. But an offense that is really clicking, and an offense that doesn't have all of its star power really in their groove, that's something special, and if you're not the Orioles, that's something scary. It's fun. This is a fun team. This is exciting. This is a really, really fun team to watch. They have a schedule coming up here. You have the Tigers. Then you have the Red Sox again. The Orioles have an opportunity here to really get a jump. It's Tigers in town in Baltimore. Tigers, Red Sox in Baltimore. and then Tigers on the road to close out April, and Kansas City on the road to begin May. All 500 teams or below. The Orioles, a really, really, really good opportunity here to really get a jump on this schedule and is to keep pace here in the American League East. But I do have one more Orioles thing to talk about. I'll tease it here. Is Felix Bautista the best reliever in Major League Baseball? We'll talk about it here on the Water Cooler. The question at hand. Is Felix Bautista the best relief pitcher in Major League Baseball? Felix Bautista, so far this year, he's appeared in 9 games, 8 2/3 innings of work, a 1.04 earned run average. He is 5-for-6 on save opportunities this season. His K's to base on balls ratio is 16-3. And opponents are hitting 182 against Felix. Now, that's Felix's case here, and I'll compare it to what I believe to be the S tier, in air quotes, of relief pitchers across Major League Baseball. The first being Emmanuel Clase of the Cleveland Guardians. Clase has appeared in 10 games, has 10 innings of work, a 2.7 ERA. He is 6-for-7. In save opportunities, and his K's to based on balls rate is 8-4. Opponents against Class A are hitting 216. The next candidate, I believe, is the Brewers' Devin Williams. Williams has appeared in 6 games and even 6 innings of work. He does not have an earned run average yet. He is not allowed to run yet this season. Just 2 save opportunities for Devin Williams. He's converted both. His K's to base on balls ratio is 11-3, and opponents are hitting 150 against Devin Williams. Another candidate, big name in the S tier of relief pitchers across Major League Baseball, is the Padres' Josh Hader. Hader has appeared in 8 games, 8 innings of work, a 1.13 earned run average. He is a perfect 5-for-5 on save opportunities, and his K's to base on balls rate is 14-4, opponents hitting 111 against Hader. Another candidate. These two get interesting. 2 big names, big name relievers here in Major League Baseball that have almost sputtered a little bit to start the season. Ryan Helsley of the St. Louis Cardinals appeared in 6 games, 7 innings of work, a 2.57 earned run average. He is 3-for-5 on save opportunities. K's to base on balls ratio, 10-3. And the number that really sticks out about Helsley, opponents hitting 296, just shy of 300, is the batting average against the Cardinals closer. Another one, again, big name with surprising numbers. Astros closer Ryan Pressly. He's appeared in 8 games. It's 7 1/3 innings of work. The ERA is at 6.14 for Pressly. He's had no save opportunities. He's converted on none of them, obviously, no save opportunities. Ryan Pressly, a guy that was the closer last year, not in the same realm that he was last year for the Houston Astros. His K's to base on balls rate is 7-1, and opponents hitting 185. Against Pressly. And of course, other big names you point to, Edwin Diaz of the New York Mets, of course, hurt. Andres Munoz of the Seattle Mariners, he's hurt. I think the point here, the question being, is Felix Bautista making a case to be the best reliever in Major League Baseball? I think the answer is undeniably that he's in the conversation. Certainly in the American League, and I think you can say in Major League Baseball. Bautista, the Mountain, as they say, has just been shut down. For the Orioles, there is something so special about being able to play an 8-inning game and then saying you give the ball to Felix, ball game over in the 9th inning. Of course, the one exception being the blown save in Boston. Cold day, first weekend of the season. I'm not worried about it. Since then, Felix Bautista has been untouchable out there. I think he is undeniably one of the best relief pitchers in Major League Baseball. In the conversation, top five, certainly I would argue with you, top three. I love Felix. The Orioles love Felix. And if you face Felix, you hate Felix. Dominant relief pitcher. I think he's certainly one of the best in Major League Baseball. Could he be the very best? I don't know that there's a definitive top ace reliever in Major League Baseball. Undeniable, he is the guy. And I think Felix is in the conversation. So that's where I stand on that. But the NFL draft is just about a week away now, and I will talk about it here next on the Water Cooler. It is almost draft time here in the NFL. And there are some stories, there's some narratives going around about this NFL draft. The Houston Texans trying to make the league think, trying to keep the league on their toes. They've gone out to say they're taking calls on the number 2 overall pick. There's been questions thrown around at will they even, you know, could they take a defensive player at number 2 and take their quarterback at 12. The Texans trying to keep the league on its toes, and I don't think anybody's biting. There's no way they're going to trade out at number 2. There's no way they're not taking their quarterback at number 2. They're getting C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud is the quarterback in Houston. He will be. I think the whole Texans trying to make teams think they're trading out, it's cute. It's funny, but they're not going to do it. There's been talk about the Texans being the team to trade up to number 3 with the Arizona Cardinals. That, on the other hand, for other teams, you know, trying to get a defensive player, not so cute, not so funny. Don't know if they'll actually do it. I personally think there's no way the Arizona Cardinals do not trade that number 3 overall pick. It's not a very good football team in Arizona. No disrespect to them. Buda Baker wants out. That is your guy that is all in for the team, will run through a wall to win a football game. And he wants out. He's done in Arizona. What do you do? You have to trade him. What do? You keep him? You keep him for what? He's not going to help you win. You're not going to win this year. You don't want a star locker room and on-field presence to just be unhappy at the team. You have to trade Buda Baker. And then you have Kyler Murray, who I'm not especially high on. You have DeAndre Hopkins there. There's, you know, talk of D-Hop being traded. How many teams can afford that? His cap hit is massive this year. It's interesting. I don't think there's any way the Cardinals take that number 3 pick. I don't think there's any reason for the Arizona Cardinals to take that number 3 pick. Whatever you get, whoever you take at number 3 is not going to solve problems this year. I think they are much better to trade out, get more picks, bring in more people rather than one, you know, potential star player that's not going to help you this year. I think they trade out. Who trades in? I don't know. It's gonna be a team with a quarterback need, I would imagine. Then again, you have teams like the Texans trying to pick back-to-back, 2-3. They're acting like we're playing Madden or something out here. But it'd be crazy. It'd be scary if the Texans trade up to that pick, and now they have their franchise quarterback and a star defensive player too, whoever they want to take at number three. Now people move. I gotta wrap up here, but every draft someone falls. Someone falls every draft. I think this year is Will Levis. Will Levis has been talked about going to the Colts at number 4, Seahawks at number 5. I think he might drop out of the first round. Once you get past the top 5, who needs a quarterback? Who needs one? Maybe the Seahawks take him at number 20? Or wherever they're picking there at the back end of the first round? I think it's very possible Will Levis falls out of the first round for sure this year. I'm out of time, though. I'll leave you with that hot take there for you. But my name's Evan John. Time snuck up on me here. This has been the Water Cooler 91.1 WHFC. Same time, same place next week. We'll see you next Thursday here on the Water Cooler.